With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. With a compelling perspective on global politics, this is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
All right, welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to TNT Today's News Talk. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show. It is Friday. We're rounding out the week, TFI Fridays. Thank you guys for joining us. Really appreciate your listenership. We are broadcasting globally on this live stream. So wherever you're in the world, we hope we are reaching you, and we hope we are delivering you some entertainment and a bit of enlightenment, and of course, some news and analysis on top. No, that's actually the bulk of it, but we try to keep it light and entertaining at least part of the way. But we are going to get quite heavy today on a couple of issues. In the second hour, we're going to find out on the ground about the so-called counteroffensive in Ukraine. We'll go to the region and connect with Arno Devole. He's an international human rights lawyer. He's been on the show before. He's going to give us his assessment of the real situation there. Looking forward to that. Certainly, we've been looking and reporting on various aspects of this over the last 72 hours. I just filed a report today with the UK column. UK Column News today at 1 p.m. UK time. And we did cover this, but we're going to get a little more granular in the detail in the second hour. Looking forward to Arno joining us there. In the first hour, the big story, of course, is Trump in America. They've gone for the nuclear option. The Democrats have just basically weaponized the DOJ. It's the one thing that everybody hoped that they would not do. And they've gone and done it. The DOJ, Merrick Garland, one of the most corrupt attorney generals in the history of the country, if not the most corrupt. I sort of wish he would have been given that Supreme Court seat way back when, but he was denied, as he was put forward by Barack Obama, by the Republicans. And who knows, it could have kept him out of trouble, out of the way. I mean, there's going to be a certain amount of liberal justices everywhere, or left-wing justices and conservative justices. But as an AG, he's been a disaster. So Biden's not even through his first full term yet. And Merrick Garland has just laid waste to the office. And he's weaponized the judiciary in ways that nobody has ever seen happen before. It almost makes J. Edgar Hoover look like he was ethical and balanced and totally clean. And as head of the FBI, Merrick Garland's taken things to whole new depths of detritus. And what they've scooped up here is the biggest, most ridiculous case, classified documents. To think that they could actually find something that constitutes a crime in all of this is pretty unbelievable. And we'll go over to sort of the main coverage on this. And what do we find? We find that there's not much more here than there was a few months ago when they were ginning up the case after they raided Trump's house in Mar-a-Lago. Why? They claim that there was sensitive documents. Well, nothing of the sort. The law is pretty clear on this, and the Trump office was liaising with the National Archives throughout the process. There was nothing ever hidden. There was no laws broken. But the DOJ seems to have gone a little bit far on this one, and it makes you wonder, is this the final play? Well, they have a couple of other cards in case this one fails, but why did Ron DeSantis run? Knowing that he was behind in the polls by, you know, anything between 20 and 30%, why would he have run if there's no chance that he would defeat Trump for the nomination? Unless Ron DeSantis was told by his donors that go and run because we'll take care of Trump. And that's what happened. So in that sense, you know, from a solidarity point of view, DeSantis doesn't mind to get rid of Trump. This is definitely a political deal. It's been struck. And DeSantis is being picked as the heir apparent. And Trump, he's supposed to be pushed out of the way here. And so this is a historic case. They're claiming there's felony charges here for mishandling classified documents. Mishandling classified documents. Okay. So they want to basically disqualify him from running for president if they can make some felony charges stick. There's no way that this would come to any sort of conclusion before the primaries. I'd be surprised if they did. There would be appeals, but maybe during that appeal process, he would be disqualified from being on the ballot. This is a possibility. This is politics, folks. This is lawfare. This is banana republic type tactics being used in the USA in the 21st century, believe it or not. And so here we have an assigned judge. I believe it's a Trump-appointed judge. Funny enough, U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon, confirmed Friday by a person familiar with the development. A bit of positive news for Trump. So, but still, this thing will drag on. So we'll see. I don't think the fact that Trump appointed this judge is going to make a difference. This is... been pre-decided one way or the other, I would think. He's either going to get off or not. But it's the damage that's done in the meantime that is going to possibly preclude his presidential run, opening the door for other establishment candidates like Ron DeSantis, deep state candidates. So Cannon, this is the judge here, and she was criticized last year for giving Trump's legal team appointing a special master to conduct an independent review of the classified documents seized from his Florida home by the FBI in what looked like a very illegal raid. Okay. But the FBI is above the law, so we don't need to worry about that. This is the new FBI, not like the old FBI. The new FBI does not have to follow rules, regulations, precedent, or anything like this. They can just go and attack political targets. This is what they've been doing since 2015, 2016. So here we go. And what's going to happen here? There's going to be a lot of legal eagling going on in the press. According to the left-wing press, this is the beginning of the end. The walls are closing in and Trump's finished. According to the MAGA camp, this is a witch hunt. Which is it? That's the question. I think I know what it is. Of course, it is a witch hunt. Is it the beginning of the end? No. Are the walls closing in? Maybe. Maybe. This definitely will not be the end of anything. As long as Trump is living and breathing, he will continue to challenge the establishment either through the election path or elsewhere. But those voters will go somewhere, folks. If they're not going to Trump, they will go somewhere to Robert F. Kennedy, or they will basically not vote in protest. So that's not good for the Republicans either. The Democrats are running a corpse. His name is Joe Biden. How is that going to go? Nobody knows, and nobody really cares at this point. It looks like after the fall Biden took this last week, literally face planted on a stage at a Navy graduation ceremony or something like this. It was embarrassing. It was embarrassing. Why on earth? What is this man doing? I saw when he did this latest meeting, I think it was Rishi Sunak, another memorable character. I think he's prime minister now. Nobody knows who's prime minister. I think Rishi Sunak is somehow in charge. The student's in charge. So the student body president is in charge of Britain. And he was over in Washington. Biden called him President Sunak. That was interesting. So Rishi got a promotion thanks to Joe. Joe's upgraded him from prime minister to president, even though there's no president in the British system. But anyway, it's a good look for the CV. And as Biden was entering the big hall, the meeting room, and everyone had their sort of notepads and, you know, water bottles, everything was positioned on the big board table. And you could see Biden shuffling into the room, almost like he didn't know where he was going. And you wonder how much, what sort of drugs is this guy hopped up on? What do they have to do to keep him sort of cogent and keep him maneuvering or walking and things like this? It looks really odd. It's like he really shouldn't be there. Clearly he's not in charge of anything, doesn't know what he's doing or where he's going. Face planted on television. This is not a good look for the country. So the Russians must be looking at this and saying, what happened to America? Like what? The Chinese are probably having a laugh thing. You guys are crazy. The Chinese don't believe that Biden got elected by a landslide. How did Joe Biden get more African-American votes than Barack Obama? I know Joe said if you don't vote for Biden, you ain't black. But I mean, do any blacks really believe that in America? I mean, how did he outperform Obama at the ballot box? Among black voters. I mean, after making a condescending, nasty comment like that, during the election cycle in 2020. It's a miracle, isn't it? You'd think there was election rigging or some sort of vote fraud, or of course we're told that that never happened, and if we even talk about that, we shall get censored and deplatformed. It's a democracy after all, ladies and gentlemen. It's a democracy. So that's what's going on. So Trump's in the dock. We'll talk more about this with Matthew Lee from Inner City Press in a couple of minutes. In the meantime, let's take a break with TNT, Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Kennison, your host. Stick around. We'll be right back after these messages.
TNT Radio's Joe Hoft.
What's going on recently, especially with the DOJ? We can talk about Merrick Garland, that attorney general, who's just as corrupt as can be, who was Obama's pick to be on the Supreme Court. That tells you everything. Barack Obama was the most corrupt individual to ever walk in D.C., in my book. I mean, that includes Jefferson Davis, who likely was in D.C. I assume he was some sort of politician for the South before the Civil War. That includes everyone. Aaron Burr, who shot Alexander Hamilton. It was just in a horrible situation way back in around 1800. A guy who likely would have been president. Hamilton was well-loved, a very bright mind, who really doesn't get enough credit for all the work he did on our Constitution. Really, you could call him the father of the Constitution. So anyways, we've got Merrick Garland and the DOJ. The DOJ is absolutely upside down.
Joe Hoft on Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Speaking on the issues that impact, this is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Patrick Henningsen Show. This is TNT, Today's News Talk. I am your host, Patrick Henningsen. We'll be joined in a couple of minutes by our legal correspondent from the Big Apple, Matthew Russell Lee, down there at the Southern District of New York Court. That's where all the action is. We'll see about this Trump case. We'll talk to Matthew. Hopefully he's got an inside scoop on it. In the meantime, let's shift over to, there's a few other interesting FBI-related and CIA-related stories here. This one I love. As you know, it is Pride Month. Well, if you didn't know, there's a lot less rainbow flags about, I've noticed. There's a little bit of a corporate backlash here. It's not as cool as it was before. They thought it was cool last year. Everybody changing their logos to rainbow flags and all the sort of child grooming that's going on in schools, shoving all this stuff down the throats of young children. I'm sure it's unpleasant for a lot of parents. Hence, hopefully they're dialing it back a little bit. However, the CIA are flying the woke standard as proud as ever. They're promoting the LGBT plus, QIA plus, whatever, KA. I got to work on the acronym. We thought we'd built it out. We even came up with some new options on there as well. Q actually means questioning LGBTQ. And we've decided, Basil and I had a long discussion about this as we were discussing a lot of important issues. When we were doing our podcasting early this week down in Brighton, and we decided that Q means question. They say it means questioning, so we think that should include heterosexual straight people, because just Q could be anything. Or no, actually, I'm going to say stand corrected. Plus, plus should include straight people. That's right. The plus, LGBTQ plus. Even Justin Trudeau says there's a plus at the end. So if he says it, there's a plus. No, there's no arguments. The plus could include straight people. So therefore, we think that it's time that the heterosexual straight community could reclaim and add themselves onto this acronym. And what sort of upheaval would that create in the movement, in the rainbow movement? Could they have a stripe on the flag for straight heterosexual people in the plus category? Because plus could mean anything. You just add whatever you want there. There's unlimited amount of genders. Of course, one of those being heterosexual, biological, male, female. Should they have a place on the flag? On the rainbow flag? And would this be a co-opting, or would this be a hijacking of the woke flag? Would that be a bridge too far for the inclusivity agenda? Because inclusive should mean inclusive, right? I mean, it's only fair. The CIA, however, have got different ideas on this, and they want everyone to celebrate Pride Month, despite having previously concocted what the CIA used to call homosexual investigations and described gay people as having mental or emotional problems. Yes, that's right. The agency used to crusade against the LGBT agenda, and they're now having to apologize for this, which is interesting, isn't it? CIA Pride, they're now putting out their memes, their graphics. Pride Month is an occasion that all of us at the agency will pay tribute to the rich history, community, and mission contributions of our LGBTQ plus, right, plus officers. The CIA tweeted, adding a bunch of phrases to spell out the word welcome in an image hanging over the Langley HQ rainbow standard there. This is up at Zero Hedge. So yeah, they're all in at the CIA with Pride Month. So they're going to be working this really for the rest of the month. So, you know, in terms of clandestine operations, it's important to have all of the woke qualifications there. And a little bit of pushback, of course. People are asking, is this a parody account? And we're going to say no. This is the official CIA account. So they're all in on the agenda. And this is great. We love this. We think it's so inclusive. Glenn Greenwald says, rebranding U.S. foreign policy and U.S. intelligence agencies, including the CIA, as a crusade for LGBTQ2AI plus rights is a truly genius feat of marketing. It's one of the reasons, not the only reason, that the U.S. liberals now regard the CIA and U.S. foreign policy as so benevolent. And the list goes on. Everybody's kind of opining and weighing in on this, laughing at it. They're absolutely getting shellacked on Twitter, is the agency. And as some pointed out, including Chuck Ross, formerly of the Daily Caller, Chuck Ross, the journalist at Chuck Ross DC, the CIA doesn't have a rich history of celebrating Pride. Quite the opposite, says Chuck Ross. And yeah, they've got this history of attacking LGBT people. It's a rich history. This is what the CIA are all about. It used to be anyway. And yeah, it's not great. So of course it's soliciting a visceral reaction from the community. And they've responded by launching a massive meme with a giant rainbow flag on it, as are other branches of the U.S. military. The Air Force is celebrating Pride Months. And there's a backlash as the Air Force tweets out the image of a soldier with a rainbow flag and the Air Force logo there. And we're wondering, how far does this go? Have they pushed the agenda too far? Again, this comes back to social media. And before social media, none of this would have been an issue. You know, they might have had some, do you know what I mean? If some flyers on the bulletin board in the commissary, do you know what I mean? It's like maybe a poster here or there in the hallway. You know, that's about as much outreach as you'd get from some of these institutions. You know, they surely wouldn't be buying ad time on any of the major networks, you know, to sort of promote their bona fides, as it were, for the movement, for the LGBTQ plus 2I plus plus A1264 agenda. No, now because of Twitter, everybody is broadcasting everything all the time. And you got to have your agenda out front all the time for every single thing. You got to weigh in on this, weigh in on that, this week, that month, Pride Month, Black History Month, such and such week, and whatever. Anyway, it used to be a week, used to be Pride Week, and that's no longer the case. It's now Pride Month. What next? Pride Year. How about Pride Year? Just all year round, all Pride, all the time. So, and apparently, yeah, there's a quite a back cultural backlash on this. I think this is going to get pushed back hard. And I think you're starting to see the beginnings of this already. How far can you push this agenda just before it gets ridiculous? And the answer is quite far indeed, and they have been pushing it gradually. And social media is going to accelerate the propagation or the promulgation of all of these ideas, these memes, these concepts. You understand that they do accelerate and or spread quickly, go viral because of social media, right? But so will the backlash be accelerated because it does move so quick and it's just in people's faces. Most people are shocked by all this and they're caught by surprise. Certainly the trans agenda has caught a lot of people by surprise, but the backlash equally will come as a result of that sort of rapid deployment, given prime position and like everybody's news feeds and everybody needs to be on board. Everyone needs to be virtue signaling on it and they can overdo it. Never underestimate the machine's ability to over-egg the pudding. And they will over-egg this one just like they do every time. They over-egged the Ukraine pudding and overcooked it. And now it's just an absolute disaster, which we'll get to in the second hour. And likewise with this agenda, they're pretty much doing the same. And it's just the natural it's the natural growth and ultimately the collapse and decay of the idea. It's just gone way past. It's been promoted too fast and way above its normal station in society to the point where you have this fringe minority like this. For instance, the trans lobby, point not something of a percent or whatever. I don't know how you even define this anymore. It's what people think about when they wake up. I identify as X or Y or whatever. The fact that it has to be pushed, has to feature in every campaign, must be on every banner, must be public, must be self-reproducing imagery constantly all the time on every platform will eventually burn itself out. That's the good news. The good news is it will burn out. The good news is the backlash is severe already. And you think it's bad this year? Wait till next year. Watch the backlash on this stuff that they are trying to ram down everybody's throats. Watch the backlash. Wait till next year. You're just seeing a taste of it this year. Next year, it's going to be scorched earth. And I'm telling you, if you've been pushing all this stuff for the last few years, you have only yourself to blame because you have not been doing your focus groups to know what the actual public, real people, are actually thinking. And when I say real people, I'm talking about the general public. I'm not talking about the presenters at CNN and the punditry on MSNBC and people working for the woke divisions of the BBC, the Guardian. Those are not real people. Those are stakeholders in this agenda. I'm talking about the public. What is the public's temperature on the issue? Have you bothered to take it? No, but you'll find out soon enough. You will find out soon enough. Next year, you'll see the real backlash. This is the warm-up in 2023. Sorry, folks. This is just the natural cycle of things. Call it what you like, but this is just the reality. Let's take a break real quick and connect with our legal correspondent, Mr. Matthew Russell Lee. On the other side, I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. Yours is TNT, Today's News Talk. We'll be right back.
Remember when all the environmentalists loved COVID lockdowns because they cleaned the air and shut down cities and stopped airline travel and car travel, and it was a green utopia? Yeah, well, not so much.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
A report in the Hill newspaper calls a climate paradox. New study finds emission cuts will make the Earth much hotter in the short term. Lower emissions during COVID lockdowns caused climate warming effect because short-lived cooling particles in the air were greatly reduced. So did you get that? Cleaner air causes more dangerous global warming. So lockdowns may have accelerated global warmings. Paging all polar bears, run for cover! The Hill newspaper reports, on the one hand, cutting fossil fuel pollution is necessary for avoiding severe global warming, but such cuts will make the Earth much hotter in the short term. Yes, my friend, that is called settled science. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
While the mainstream media peddles fear with climate change alarmism, thousands of prominent scientists reject this pseudoscience. For example, CLINTEL was founded in 2019 by Emeritus Professor of Geophysics Gus Berkhout and science journalist Marcel Kroc. This global network of 900 scientists and professionals issued the World Climate Declaration, There Is No Climate Emergency, which was endorsed by numerous experts in the field, including professors of climatology and meteorology and other related scientific disciplines. Good environmental stewardship requires a strong economy. Genuine environmentalists understand this and that a destroyed economy will impoverish billions of people. This would not only be a humanitarian tragedy, but an environmental tragedy in the name of net zero carbon.
Patrick Henningsen and TNT.
All right, welcome back, folks. Welcome back. We are live and direct here on TNT, broadcasting globally. Hello, everybody. I hope you're well. It's great to see some of you guys at the Better Way Conference in Bath, England. Very much enjoyed that. Great to also spend time with our TNT colleagues there as well, and some great interviews, some of which we featured up at 21stCenturyWire.com, James Corbett, Derek Burrows, there's a whole bunch of others, Robin Minotti, I mean, some amazing, amazing people, Dr. Simon Godek. It was a great experience all the way around, so enjoy those as well. And we'll also post earlier in the week some of our roadshow podcast with Basil Valentine and Blake Lovewell. It's great to get on the road with the gear and set up our pop-up studio down in Brighton on the South Coast. That was certainly worth it. But now we're going to shift gears to the U.S. Welcome, Matthew Lee, InterCity Press. How are you doing?
Doing well, Patrick. How are you?
I'm okay. Tell us, Trump, what's up?
I'll tell you, it doesn't seem like a week doesn't go by without another Trump case. But this one, by all accounts, is a big one. I have to say, unfortunately, it's in Miami, but I'm going to do my best. It's been brewing for a while. Special Prosecutor Jax has been looking at the retention of documents when Trump left the White House. And although others have been said to have also retained documents, including Joe Biden, it seems that Trump having kind of doubled down, like in the case even also of Pence, if people are found with documents, you're supposed to say, oops, sorry, Mulligan. Trump said, hey, you know, I have a right to keep them. Then he returned some, then he kept investigating, then there were more, then his lawyers said there were no more. It's resulted in an indictment that he announced on True Social yesterday. It hasn't been unsealed yet, so it's a little premature to get into the specifics, but by some accounts, I was going to say all accounts, but by some accounts, it's seven charges, not only retention of these documents, but also conspiracy to retain the documents, obstruction of justice, false statements, and the mishandling of official documents. I'm seeing a lot of reporting saying there's been a lot of noise, but this is the big one. He could do decades of time in jail. Let's see. It is kind of an extraordinary move in the sense that part of the question becomes what's going to be the timing of this thing. He's going to show up Tuesday in Miami. It's going to be a total circus down there. He'll be presented. Presumably, they won't try to detain him. I mean, I can't imagine that. So the question will be, then he'll get discovery. Maybe this whole process would be until even after the primary or even general election. There's the already pending New York State criminal case, which might take precedent. Basically, you end up with judges saying, you know, who's going to defer to who? The question, it seems to me like Judge Merchan would say, like, maybe this other case is bigger and has more potential. The thing that's interesting, I think, to a lot of people, again, there's the coverage of this is just totally split. Like, left-leaning media are saying, look at the people defending them, or saying, which I feel has some truth to it. It makes America much more like kind of Brazil. I was going to say a third world country. I don't know if the phrase makes sense anymore, but this idea of indicting former politicians even as they run, you know, some people think it's a no-brainer. Some people think he's a total criminal and a crook, and this has been too long in coming. And there is that view. And there's other people saying, which might be my view, I guess I'm saying, if it's true that other people that have left office have taken documents with them, I'm not saying he didn't thumb his nose at the law. I'm just saying, is it, I have a, my sense is, and maybe, you know, some people, if you're looking for more chaos, it's good. It definitely builds more dissension in the country. People kept saying, I guess some people said as to the New York prosecution, you know, this was too small, this hush money payments to Stormy Daniel, that shouldn't have been, you got to wait for the big case. And this is supposedly the big case. I just, there might be a big case out there. I think if you could catch a sitting American president trading secrets with MBS, I think that would be a big case. I think keeping some boxes of documents in Mar-a-Lago to kind of show them off to other, you know, affluent, over-the-hill club members, I don't know. I don't know what they have. So, we'll, you know, it remains to be seen. But it is it's considered big news here. And one Republican candidate for the primary, Vivek Ramaswamy, has said, if elected, which seems unlikely, of course, if elected, he would pardon Trump. DeSantis has denounced it as a weaponization of DOJ, but hasn't said what he would do. Most Republicans have condemned it, and most Democrats have celebrated it. So that's about the lay of the land. There are, of course, other Trump cases as well. There's the E. Jean Carroll case. Trump has asked for a new trial. He's also appealed it. And there's a second E. Jean Carroll case about defamation perpetrated in the first CNN town hall of this primary season, and on which DOJ has to decide whether they are no longer going to seek to substitute the U.S. government for Trump in that first case, which they were going to do. They were going to say you can't sue a president for defamation. But now that he has allegedly defamed her after being president, they may withdraw that. I can see that happening, in which case there'll be another defamation case here in SDNY. So the cases are growing. The impact on the race and on Trump remains to be seen. I don't know what your view of it all is. What do you think of this? We haven't seen it yet, but what do you think of it?
So I was going to ask you this is, look, on the documents case, if you think that's the big one, you think that's the big case. Okay. Arguably.
I don't know.
No, but if it is, I'm saying if it is, sure. If that's the big case, is it possible that, I mean, would it be concluded in a timely manner? This is DOJ level, obviously. Trump is clearly going to appeal anything. Would any of this preclude him from being on the ballot for the primaries?
I think not at all. Absolutely. I don't think at all. I think also as a defendant, he could easily string it out past that. I think it would be interesting if he were to be elected, whether the idea I think he could get a deferred sentencing, a deferred surrender date. You know what I mean? Or maybe he could run the country from prison. I don't know. No, I don't think it could take him off. This is not a death blow to his campaigning. And in fact, ironically, it seems to it doesn't really seem to hurt his chances, definitely in the primary. Whether it would hurt him in the general, who even knows? Because the people that are against him are already against him. That's what I mean, this idea that this is the big one. I mean, I guess it's always true in a criminal case. In a sense, it depends what they unseal on Tuesday, but people have already known. There are already photographs out of the boxes of documents in Mar-a-Lago. I don't think it's hard to believe that he was like, hey, I'm going to take some of these things with me. You know, it seems to me there's a lot of unclarity in this law anyway, but I don't think he, in good faith, you know, I think he was like, screw it, I can take this stuff. This is some great memorabilia. I think here's the one thing I would say. I think both morally and legally, if they can find some plan to trade this document with foreign powers, now you have a whole different ball game. You know, if it's sort of like I'm a collector, I'm a hoarder of documents, not just a hoarder, but I feel they're mine and I'm going to take them down to my club and I'm going to lie about it when they ask it. I guess I'm not that surprised by somebody dissembling. And so, no, I don't think so. I think it actually makes the primary kind of more interesting because it's going to force the other candidates to sort of, this question of would you pardon him is going to become, I think, something of a litmus test. And I'm not sure how long DeSantis will hold out on that. We'll have to see.
But, the thing is, to me, it's a dead letter on arrival, Matthew, because Joe Biden's got way more classified documents, which he had no right to take anyway. He was vice president. They're stashed all over the place, including in his own garage next to Hunter Biden's stash. Plus, you've got Mike Pence. He's on the hook for a similar thing. So they can't claim executive privilege. So, if they're going to do this even-handedly, then I think the other cases sort of cancel it out. But it's to me that just there's a non-case here. And the question with this, plus the hush money one, which is a stretch. And I'm looking at all these different cases, Matthew, and I'm saying to myself, would these be major criminal cases if it involved anybody else at any other time in history? Would the government or would the powers that be take these that far to prosecution on these various cases the way they have? Would they even warrant any attention or the resources of the state, etc.? And the answer has to be no. It appears to be no. And if the answer is no, then is this not just lawfare?
I hear that. The one thing I would say, first I was going to say, and actually this is going to come off as me treating it more seriously than maybe I'd actually do, but it can be said that it's a dead letter. The thing is that neither rightfully or wrongfully, neither Biden nor Pence has been indicted, right? So the problem from Trump's point of view is these indictments don't go away. Something is going to happen in this case, At best for Trump, the sense that it shouldn't have been brought will grow, and they'll settle it for less than felony or something like that. But it doesn't go away. That's the thing. It's good kind of, I don't want to say dinner party conversation. It's good philosophically. It's entirely fair to compare Trump to Biden and Trump to Pence on the record on the issue of record retention. But in reality, one person is indicted, and that case goes forward. And you, as a private citizen, you can't indict somebody else and saying that someone else is committing the crime. Maybe that's an argument to the jury when it finally comes up. And even that is often precluded by judges. But I do want to, I'm just trying to there have been other cases for retention of documents. The one is escaping me right now, but maybe if we don't do it this week, we can do it next week. There was one in Indiana about somebody retaining documents. You can be charged for these things, but what I wonder is really I know it's always said that Merrick Garland is like, there are people to the left that are saying he's too weak, he should have done this earlier. I think the reality is that although you may be able to find a few cases where people have been prosecuted for retention of documents, I think you need a real home run to go after a former president that's running. I think, unless you want to become a country in which everyone indicts everybody else, meaning if Trump wants, then he indicts Biden on the same charges. I mean, I think the funny thing is there seems to be not just the far left. I don't even know how to define these things, but the kind of, I don't want to say mainstream, and I actually want to, I'm going to tilt from this beating this horse in just a moment. But like the sense among, again, the New York Times, Politico, the Washington Post, like this is huge. We knew it was coming. And that this is a really strong case. I don't share that. And this is I'm going to use this as the transition because.
So this isn't a home run then. This is like a grounder. This is a grounder to second base, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Or maybe it's a cheap single down the line. I'm not sure. But we may be for your more global audience, we may be getting too much into the weeds of baseball. But yeah, it's a mixed thing. And the only thing is, I don't want to say it's there are Republicans saying it's a big joke. It's not a joke. I cover the federal courts every day. And the problem with federal indictments is they don't go away. It's not like, by God, something has to happen in the case. And of course, the people that brought the case are now, they're very hard pressed to say like, this was a mistake. It ends up, it's going to be pleaded out or it's going to go to trial. I doubt very much he's going to get it dismissed, is because it's not, you know, these are, they're plausible charges. It's just a question of really politically, I mean, who knows? Maybe Merrick Garland delayed in doing it to do it late enough that it would try to cast a shadow over the primary. I just don't think it has that effect. But here's where I wanted to get to this question of what is mainstream media? And it came up in a thing that actually has a British angle to it. I went down to D.C. We were unable to do it on Monday because I went to D.C. and I covered this. It was really just a status conference in a Freedom of Information Act case against the Department of Homeland Security to get the visa application and waiver, if any, for Prince Harry. And it's turned into a very political, I mean, it's really funny. I just thought it was an interesting thing. And so I started covering it and I tweeted about it. And I got a huge amount of like, this is bullshit. He's a, you know, people get waivers all the time. This is a sort of like right-wing catnip. And the more I thought about it, I thought, one, FOIA is FOIA. Like, whether you think they should have allowed Harry to stay in the country given his admitted drug use in his book and elsewhere, is one question, but whether Department of Homeland Security should be withholding records or refusing to expedite the request is a different one. So it's easy to go procedural on this one. I think it's a legitimate question whether he is being treated differently, not only because he's somehow a big shot or pseudo former head of state, but because of the politics that he's viewed as kind of a democratic, you know, champion or icon, which I think is true. From the reaction to my coverage, I didn't realize that this was like writing about, you know, Joe Biden or Michael Avenatti at one point. You know, I didn't realize that like he's so closely aligned with one party. But here was the line that I wanted to be sure that I mentioned to you. The courtroom, I wasn't able to live tweet because they said, turn off your phones or you're going to get thrown out. So I got to play by the rules. So I would have gotten this dialogue. The Department of Justice lawyer said there's no reason for us to expedite our response to this FOIA request because there's just not very widespread or extensive media interest. And the irony is that the courtroom was full. Largely, I agree, the Daily Mail was there. There were a lot of British tabloids there, and there were some reluctant American journalists saying their editor made them come and do it. But so even the judge, Judge Nichols, said, I don't know, it seems like there's some pretty much media interest in this. And the DOJ said, well, only in certain social circles. And we define media, mainstream media interest as, and he used it as an exclusive list, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and the TV networks. That's it. And I was like, this is like the Trump thing. The idea that it's not just, I don't agree that the media is the enemy of the people. But I think this idea that somehow there's different categories of media, that the Freedom of Information law is going to create this super category of entities, you know, entitled to expedited treatment of FOIA requests or access to court hearings or, you know, and that everyone else is somehow different. And as they pointed out, they were like, the Daily Mail has more hits than it was. The British journalists were hand slapping. But I found it really shocking. And that was my takeaway from it, is that the Biden Department of Justice has this incredibly elite, was willing to put on the record just to delay a response to this Harry FOIA. So I'll stop there. And maybe I shouldn't have been surprised. You tell me.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a bit, Harry is synonymous with wokeism. And so anybody that rails against the left or wokeism is obliged to not like Prince Harry or Meghan. So this is kind of an established schism. So yeah, that's the thing. So, you know, I can see the Daily Mail and every UK tabloid press and half the US, certainly conservative media, they'd be all over it. So yeah.
The FOIA press is brought by the Heritage Foundation. That's why I was a little, I mean, admittedly, it's clear. I personally think it would have been better.
They're a think tank. So it's like, what are they doing involved in that? Like, they're not even a media outlet, the Heritage Foundation.
Exactly. But it was said that they use it to put out studies. They were very proud to do. They were extremely proud to be the ones doing the request. To me, the Daily Mail should be able to do a FOIA request. And I once actually brought a case where I tried to do a FOIA request in Delaware, and they said the Delaware statute is only available to Delaware residents, even though they incorporate things in Delaware. So I think, I don't know the history of it being brought by Heritage. And again, in certain worlds, that doesn't, to me, it doesn't discredit the FOIA request. I don't care who the FOIA requester is, but it did, it slowed me down a bit in the, not slowed me down, like I wish there was a straight, I wish the freaking New York Times cared about FOIAing that, but of course they don't. And that's the problem, is that like, I want to believe that there is a kind of, some kind of common denominator in journalists, that they're just interested in. I mean, to me, it's an interesting question. Did the Department of Human of Homeland Security do a favor in this instance? Right? Are others? I don't really think necessarily that somebody applying for a visa, if they've admitted to using magic mushrooms, should be barred. But if that is the rule and it is imposed on others, should you waive it for Prince Harry? I don't think so, but I think if you are doing it, it should be known. That's, I think that's like a totally like unassailable, you know, thing. Let's go beyond politics for a moment, because this actually was it turned out to be kind of the inner city press story of the week in terms of response. And maybe it's just because lawyers love this crap. There was a lawyer here in the Southern District of New York. He had it's a nothing case. I mean, no cases are nothing, of course, but a guy called Mata suing Avianca, the Colombian airline. And it was proceeding along, probably would have been settled, but the lawyers screwed up and they filed a brief that was based on ChatGPT. So it cited some cases, and when the Colombian airline Avianca responded, they said, we can't find these cases. And then the judge issued an order and said, I'd like to see these cases, the hard copy. And the lawyers at hand, some kind of relatively small New York firm or kind of ham and egg firm, as we call it, instead of saying like, okay, we screwed up, we used ChatGPT, they went back to ChatGPT and said, please give us these cases. And ChatGPT just invented the cases. So they turned into the court cases that don't exist. And yesterday there was a sanctions hearing on it, and they got roasted by the judge. The judge was like, so how do you usually do research? You know, why couldn't you like open a book? You know, and so I was live tweeting this because I was able to, and people like lawyers in France, all over the world, people, because it's an interesting issue, right, of technology and the law. But it was just like, I think people don't, and this was interesting to me. He said, I thought it was a search engine. Which is true. Like a search engine doesn't mean the things you find are true, but at least it means the things that you find are previously on the internet before you search, right? They might be false, but you're searching a known universe of documents to find what's out there. Whereas ChatGPT has studied the internet and gives you what you want. It writes it for you. So these guys are kind of screwed. There was no decision reached, but I will say that there seems to be a huge amount of interest in ChatGPT, and I think its inclusion in politics is going to be coming soon. And maybe we can say that the Trump indictment was written by ChatGPT.
Yeah, I noticed ChatGPT is interfering in a lot of things. It's making its way. It's like shimmying its way into all sorts of stories. I even saw an article summary from a major media outlet, and it says from ChatGPT. So it looks like the opening summary paragraph. And guess what? It was fucking, pardon my French, it was wrong.
Yeah.
It got the fact. Yeah, it totally. Got like basic facts wrong. They didn't even correct it. So I'm just like, this is just a ridiculous, totally ridiculous. Like, why are
it's journalists? It's coming though.
I know.
Yeah, my friend. I'm saying for some reason it hit a nerve. You know, as much as or more than the Trump Carol v. Trump case. I think who knows? It's among a certain. To me, it was refreshing because the people that were responding were less partisan. It was all kind of, they were very much kind of finger waggers and bad lawyers and saying they should be disbarred, but some found humor in it. But I didn't realize this. I woke up this morning to find that my thread had itself been turned into a ChatGPT. This thing is eating everything, okay? I don't think there's any turning back. I don't want to overdo it, but I think it's a pretty, and the funny thing is that the defenders of ChatGPT, and they're, I mean, whatever, it is what it is. I'm not a Luddite. I'm not anti-technology. These guys were saying, the lawyer's defense was they were fooled. They had no idea. They weren't on notice that ChatGPT gives you made up stuff. And somebody said, look at the search bar. It says right underneath, this thing produces like made up stuff. Like what it's trying to do is to recreate. You know, I was very impressed. I saw where somebody asked it to finish this famous Ernest Hemingway short story beginning, you know, like, what was it? Baby shoes never used, returned. That, you know, it's supposed to be very evocative. And this thing, ChatGPT, wrote a fine short story out of it. Like, it can mimic the human mind pretty well, but you cannot use it for facts. It's insane. It made up whole court cases. And they were not bad either, by the way. They were like, you know, Verghese versus China Airways. It made up all of these airline cases that don't exist anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is good. It is good for imaginary stuff. And like you said, for like doing like ad hoc, you know, bits of essays and stuff like that. But man, it scares me to see how many journalists and people who are marketing themselves as journalists on, you know, Twitter and things like that. And they're totally relying.
No, you're right. We should stick to the guns. I mean, I
swear. Listen to this. I was on a show and the host goes, hold on, let me look this up on chat, see what ChatGPT is. Like a basic question. First, there's something he should have known just as a general knowledge person. But the fact that he had to go to chat, if you said, I'm going to go to Wikipedia and find out, you'd get harangued and laughed at. But now it's okay to, it's almost cool at the moment anyway, to say, oh, hold on, let me check ChatGPT.
I actually, and again, and Wikipedia is probably more credible in the sense that people are able, of course, people abuse of that, but it's kind of fact-checked or crowdsourced. ChatGPT is just like a black box making shit up, you know? So it's just, but again, I never like to be in the position of like, oh, we're the real journalists. They're the fake ones, ChatGPT. And that may be true, but I kind of say let 100 flowers bloom. That, you know, the thing is, you know, it's just weird when you see, like, to see this thing turn. I guess someone could imagine the whole court hearing. Like, the whole, we could go beyond it. Like, did this case even really happen? Is this happening, Patrick? That's my question to you.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I suppose you save money on your paralegal fees and whatnot, then it's useful.
That firm is totally screwed. That's all I'm saying. They actually, that's their argument. They said, don't sanction us. We're pretty much out of business now, because it's true. If anyone Googles them and says, what firm? I've just slipped and fallen, you know, in front of the Exxon office building in Manhattan. Which firm should I hire? Oh, let me hire these guys who don't even read law books. They just, it's incredible.
Yeah, and imagine, you think this is bad? Just listen. How many students from let's say junior high school, undergraduate, master's, PhD, are using these AI bots to write all their stuff, to do their citations, all that Harvard-style citations and all that stuff that you actually before had to do. I know a lot of people that use Google and plagiarize the hell out of everything. I knew plenty of people that use that. And I knew some professors that had software to try to detect it, but I also knew professors that didn't really use the detection software and had, you know, proofreaders who were themselves graduate students. And a lot of, I know people, I can tell you right now that absolutely did not write a damn thing to get their advanced degree. And then they walk into, you know, credentialed positions after that. So now, what do you think?
Nuclear power plant. Yeah. But wait a second. Didn't Joe Biden, even before ChatGPT, didn't Joe Biden do that on a speech?
Of course. Yeah. Joe Biden was the internet. No, Al Gore was the internet. Joe Biden was ChatGPT before it was even.
Yeah, he made up. Didn't he? I mean, I think there was the idea that he took an entire speech from a British candidate. But that's another story for another time.
Yeah, Churchill. No, I think he stole it from Winston Churchill. No, it was Boris. I can't remember who it was, but Biden's absolutely horrible. Look,
it killed off one of his early campaigns, but he lived and survived.
Hey, we're gonna wrap it up, Matt. Okay. We're running out of time. Matthew Lee, thank you for joining us this week on TNT Today's News Talk for our legal segment. We really appreciate it.
Definitely. Anytime.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. That is Matthew Russell Lee, Inner City Press. Follow him on Twitter and also on Substack as well. Look, we'll take a break. Top of the hour news headlines coming up. We got a lot more on the other side, including later in the second hour, a look inside from on the ground. We're going to Donbass to learn about the real counteroffensive of the Ukrainians. Is it all it's hyped up to be?